Today we're learning Parshas Bo, a very exciting Parsha, tons of the last of the three Makis, a lot of material, and we have the first material of Mitzvos, actually. We have in Exodus chapter 12, verse 1, where we have the very first Mitzvah that's given in the Torah. That's the famous Rashi at the beginning of Chumash, that why doesn't the Torah just begin here? That there's really, this is the first Mitzvah that's given to the Jewish people as a whole. There are a couple of Mitzvahs that are mentioned in Sefer Bereishis, Bris Milah, Gid HaNoshe, Pur Urvu. But the first Mitzvah that's given, to, and these Mitzvahs are alluded to later in the Chumash as well, so it doesn't have to, I mean, not Gid HaNoshe, I guess. But these are didn't have to be presented in Sefer Bereishis. You just wrote a whole Sefer just for three mitzvahs. Why? That's the why. Okay, we have explained the why, the importance of learning from the patriarchs and the matriarchs and their actions. But excuse me. In any event, the first mitzvah that's given to the Jewish people as a whole is the mitzvah of Kiddush HaChodesh, which is the mitzvah of sanctifying new months. And then not only are we supposed to sanctify the new months at the proper time, but Chodesh Hazeh Lachem Rosh Chodeshim, that we're supposed to count the months to Chodesh Nisan. Nisan is the first month, Iyar is the second month, Sivan is the third month, etc., etc. That's how we're supposed to refer to the months, and that's how they're referred to in Chumash. The names of the months that we have nowadays are already found towards the end of Tanakh, in Megillas Esther, and Sefer Ezra, are from Bavel. They were Babylonian names of the months that we found that most people find it easier to refer to months by name than by number. So that's why this became accepted in Jewish tradition as well, to refer to the months by name, which is not so problematic because it's basically implied that when you refer to Chodesh Sivan, you're referring to the third month. So it's not necessarily problematic that you count the months, that you don't use the actual numbers when counting the months, as long as you know that the months begin in Nisan. That's why some people try to avoid, actually, the usage of the numbers when referring to the secular months. That when you, they try to say that when you want to write a date like July 2nd, whatever, so instead of writing 6-2, you write 2-J-U-L as an abbreviation. You don't use the number because that might be a violation of a Chodesh Hazeh Lachem Rosh Chodeshim, that the month of Nisan is supposed to be the first month of the year. So if you number the months in a different manner, that might not be so good. So sometimes we have no choice. So if you are filling out some sort of form and you have to refer to the months by number, so you really have no choice. You have to refer to them month by number. The Goyim aren't going to understand what on earth you're talking about. But if at all possible, it is better to date documents or date checks or whatever using the names of the English month rather than the secular rather than the number of the secular month. You should use the name. We're really supposed to, the way the Jews are really supposed to create the calendar is by being mekadesh al pi ha'ri'ah, that when we have witnesses testify to the Beis Din. This was usually done by the Great Sanhedrin, although it technically could be done by any Beis Din of three, that three smuchim, the people of real smicha that are in Eretz Yisrael. There's a machlokes, harishonim, that whether the Kiddush HaChodesh has to take place in Eretz Yisrael, or it could even take place out of Eretz Yisrael. And it seems to be a gemara like that. The Rebbe Kiva once went out of Eretz Yisrael till Aber Es Hashanah, that he was samuch in Eretz Yisrael, but he went out of Eretz Yisrael. So it could be that if you have a Beis Din of three people who had smicha in Eretz Yisrael, so they could go out of Eretz Yisrael in order to perform Kiddush HaChodesh, if such a thing were necessary. But in any event, they have to be real smuchim. And nowadays, we don't have real smuchim. So what happened to the calendar? So what can we do? According to the straightforward understanding of the halacha, we should have no calendar anymore, no months. Meaning that basically the only Jewish holiday we should really have nowadays is Shabbos. So Shabbos doesn't need any sanctification in order to be Shabbos. You're supposed to make Kiddush, of course. But Shabbos is Shabbos is Shabbos. Every 7 days of Shabbos is not dependent on the sanctification of the Beis Din. So therefore, really, we should just have Shabbos every 7 days. We should have no months. And we have a problem dating documents as well. That might be a bit of an issue. Well, there should be no months. If there's no months, there should be no Pesach, no Sukkot, no Shavuos, nothing. So how do we have months nowadays if we have no Kiddush HaChodesh, that we don't have a Beis Din sanctifying the day of the new month according to the sighting of the new moon? So we have a fellow by the name of Hillel, who is not the Hillel of the really famous one who was in the times of Bayesheni, but he was a descendant of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, the compiler of the Mishnah. So this we're talking about in the days of the late days, maybe, of the Amoraim, the sages of the Talmud, after the Mishnah was already compiled. So he saw that the smicha was waning at that time, and there was going to be an issue that the Jews would not be able to have a calendar because there was no smicha. So what he did is he created a fixed calendar that would approximately reflect the new moon. Although if you notice that when we announced the Molad in Shul before we bench Rosh Chodesh, on the Shabbos before Rosh Chodesh, so it doesn't always correspond exactly to the day of Rosh Chodesh. Sometimes it's a little bit before, sometimes a little after. So that's part of the imperfection of the fixed calendar. That one thing that we should really look forward to fixing when Bimheira Bi'Amenu we reestablish the way that is really supposed to be done, which is by sighting of the new moon. But in any event, so this Reb Hillel promulgated a fixed calendar, which may have been adjusted a little bit over the subsequent couple generations, but he fundamentally was the first one who established a fixed calendar that was to be used for the rest of the Doros. Now, the problem with a fixed calendar also, if anybody remembers back to when I had been when I first joined the shul, I was the assistant rabbi, and this was this was like 2 months later, we had Thanksgivica. But there was one of the rare times when Hanukkah and Thanksgiving coincide. That means Hanukkah is very early according to the secular calendar. So we had a dinner Friday night in shul, communal dinner, and we had a speaker, and the speaker was Rabbi Rapp. Who was there? Anybody remember? Raise your hand if you were there. Oh, just one? Maybe I'm missing someone. Okay, so Rabbi Rapp was the speaker. And Rabbi Rapp spoke about that if you take the fixed calendar and you go another 500 years or so, or maybe more, I don't remember the exact amount of time, but a very, very long time, so everything is going to be out of whack because the fixed calendar wasn't perfect. So it means that Pesach's not going to be in a few, several hundred years from now. So Pesach is no longer going to be in the spring if we keep following the fixed calendar. So it's a major, major problem. And we hope Mashiach is going to come before then and we'll have the restoration of being Mekadesh al-Pi Ariyah. But in the meantime, we have to deal with this fixed calendar, which is not at all perfect, but we have no choice. But the question is, what authority did Reb Hillel have to promulgate a fixed calendar? It says in the Torah that you're supposed to sanctify the new months al-Pi Ariyah, that you're supposed to cite the new moon, and the Beis Din is supposed to sanctify the months. So what right did he have to do this? So this is a famous machlokes between the Rambam and the Ramban, who have vastly different approaches regarding to what the authority of the fixed calendar is. The Ramban says what you think is more pashut. The Ramban says that the pshat is that Reb Hillel and his Beis Din sanctified all the future months in advance. They said, we're right now, we're a Beis Din of Smuchim, and we now have this testimony as to when the new moon is going to be. And even if it's a little wrong, it doesn't matter, because all that matters is what the Beis Din says, not when the moon actually appears. So therefore, from now until eternity, we are sanctifying all the new months. And here is the schedule of how we're doing it. And they promulgated this calendar throughout Klal Yisrael, and they sanctified all the new months in advance. That's the sheet of the Ramban. The Rambam, however, has a completely different pshat. The Rambam says that the reason that the fixed calendar works is that there is a tradition, he calls it Moshe Misina, I think, a very, very ancient tradition, that you have two options. Either you can go according to the sanctification of the Beis Din, when there is a Beis Din, that's how you're supposed to do it. But if there is no Beis Din, the halacha l'Moshe miSinai allows for a different option, that the sanctification of the new month follows the Jewish community that lives in Eretz Yisrael. That the rest, it doesn't matter if the Beis Din officially sanctifies the month or not. If the sanctification of the new month follows the practice of the Jewish community that lives in Eretz Yisrael, meaning that Reb Hillel, when he promulgated the fixed calendar, was not saying that we sanctify all these months in advance and it can never be changed. Rather, what he said is this is a suggested fixed calendar, and the Jews of Eretz Yisrael adopted this fixed calendar. And since the Jews of Eretz Yisrael are following this calendar, that means that the rest of the world has to follow this calendar. That means that nothing was, according to the Rambam again, nothing was done in advance. Rather, every Rosh Chodesh, the Jews in Eretz Yisrael, now there are a lot more than there were, 500 years ago, whatever, but at that time, there were also Jews in Eretz Yisrael. There's never been a time that Eretz Yisrael was completely devoid of Jews. So that means that when was Rosh Chodesh Shvat? It was Thursday, right? A week ago. So that means that Rosh Chodesh Shvat was not declared in advance by Reb Hillel, but rather when the Jews of Eretz Yisrael davened Musaf and wished each other a good Chodesh and started as dating their documents the first day of Shvat, last Thursday, that created the month of Shvat. That is what created the month of Shvat, and that's what makes the Jews and the rest of the world have to observe the month of Shvat and date their documents and observe the holidays when appropriate accordingly. What is the major, huge difference between the Shittas of the Ramban and the Rambam? What is the major, huge difference? The major, huge difference is, do we have the authority to correct the fixed calendar? According to the Ramban, that Reb Hillel sanctified all the months in advance, we have no choice. We're going to be really stuck in a few hundred years when everything is in the wrong season, because we have no authority to change the calendar until we have real smuchim. According to the Rambam, however, that the calendar fundamentally follows the practice of the Jews in Eretz Yisrael. If all the sages in Eretz Yisrael get together and agree, unfortunately, that seems to be not such a likely scenario, but maybe in a real emergency like Pesach falling in the winter, maybe would engender such consensus. But according to the Rambam, if the sages in Eretz Yisrael would get together and they would adjust the fixed calendar, and the Jews in Eretz Yisrael would start observing Rosh Chodesh differently, according to a different calendar than the fixed one that we've been using for the last 1500 years or so, then the fixed calendar could, in theory, change. Again, nobody's talking about changing the fixed calendar in the very near future, should such a thing still be necessary, because there will be no Kiddush Al Pi Ariyah. Again, we hope for the restoration of Kiddush Al Pi Ariyah as soon as possible. But this will be a major difference that the great postgame will have to debate in the event that it really becomes an emergency that will require changing the fixed calendar. But in any event, we should all recognize that this is the fixed calendar is not ideal, and we should daven among other things that we should have the restoration of Kiddush HaChodesh Al-Pi Ariyah as soon as possible. Question is also, why was this the first mitzvah? Why, you think maybe Shabbos, Arayos, something more severe, you might think, should be the first of the mitzvahs of the Torah, not the mitzvah of Kiddush HaChodesh. The answer is because Kodesh Baruch Hu apparently wanted to make it clear to the Jews that they are a nation, that we're not, they were in Egypt, they were slaves in Egypt, but this strengthened their identity, and this strengthens our identity in our current Golos as well, that we are not simply a religion. We are a civilization, a people, a nation, an ethno-religious group, if you want to call it. We have, it's not just a matter of religious laws. We have our own civilization with its own customs and systems of life. So it's very important whenever possible to use the Jewish dates. That again, if you have a meeting with someone at work who's not Jewish, obviously, or not from, doesn't know what's going on. So you say we're coming, you know, well let's meet for lunch on the 12th of Sivan. So that's not gonna help anyone. But among Jews, I always give the example of celebrating birthdays and anniversaries or something. That it's much more proper to as much as possible to use the Hebrew date for things, even with more mundane things. That if again, this is also hard because everybody now has their all their meeting schedules in their phones, and the phone goes according to the, even though you could download, I guess, a program that shows the Jewish calendar, the phone always works according to the secular calendar. So it's if possible, it's much better to say if you're meeting a friend, a friend for lunch, to say I'll meet you on the 14th of Elul rather than the 6th of September or whatever it is. Just we should keep in mind that strengthens our identity and strengthens our consciousness that we are guests in the surrounding culture. We're our own civilization, and we're working towards recreating that civilization in Eretz Yisrael. But those of us who are not living in Eretz Yisrael, and even Eretz Yisrael isn't completely there yet, we should try as much as possible to keep a consciousness of this fact. We're now in verse 4. The Chazal point out that there are a lot of differences in rules between the Korban Pesach that was done in Egypt before Yetzias Mitzrayim and the Korban Pesach that is supposed to be done for all generations. So, for example, God says, "Take the select your Korban Pesach and bring it home on the 10th of Nisan, on the 10th day of that month." And it wasn't called the Nisan back then. And you were supposed to have it hang out in your house, tie it to your bed, whatever. Until the time that was supposed to be shechted on the 14th of Nisan. And this rule does not apply in future generations. Just like it says later on in this parasha, v'chacha tochlu so masnechem chagurim nalechem raglechem amakelchem biyadchem. You're supposed to eat it fast when you're dressed in your belt and you have your staff in your hand to show that you're leaving Egypt, that this rule did not apply for the eating of the Korban Pesach in general, except for that first year. And in fact, we know that it's sort of the opposite. And now we're supposed to have the Seder, which obviously is really supposed to include the Korban Pesach, in a manner that befits free, relaxed people. We're supposed to do it in a reclining position. We're supposed to eat beseba. We're supposed to do it unhurriedly, exactly. So we do the opposite. So not all the rules that you read in this parsha are applicable to the Korban Pesach that we will soon be eating, or maybe even this year. We have to learn the halachas. Should it become relevant, everybody has to learn the halachas of Korban Pesach, as it's something that's done at home. You know, you sprinkle the blood on the mizbeach, but other than that, you get to eat the whole goat or lamb. It could be it's a 1 year old, less than 1 year old. It's a goat or lamb is the Korban Pesach, and it's very small. And you take it home and you roast it, and you eat a kazayis of it. You make a shawarma, right, with the lettuce and the matzah and the meat of the Korban Pesach, al matzah sumrorim. That the simple understanding, the way most people understand what Hillel did, this is not the Hillel we were just talking about before, but the Hillel who lived in the times of Bayesheni. So it says, Al matzah sumrorim yochlu, that they shall eat it upon matzah and bitter herbs. So the most understand that he actually made a sandwich of all three. The Rambam has a different shot that he just made a sandwich of the matzah maror, and he ate the Korban Pesach separately, but whatever it is. So the Pashas says he made a sandwich of all three. And make it it's a shawarma, no? Remember, because matzah used to be soft, as it still is in many communities. Matzah is soft. There's no halacha at all whatsoever that matzah is supposed to be hard. it's a complete misnomer that, in my opinion, has led to a lot of problems in matzah production, because people get this idea that if something is hard, it must be matzah, and if something is soft, it must be chametz. Again, that's a way oversimplification, but that's not true at all. Matzah has absolutely nothing to do with being hard. Just in the times of Chazal, certainly, and many Jewish communities up to close to the present day, some still do it to the present day. We have in Brooklyn, I think they have a factory where they have some Syrians that they bake matzah this way. I've always wanted to go see it. I never got around to it yet. In any event, so matzah used to be soft. It's just a matter of how much water you put in the dough, really. And it's not tasty. You should know, I tasted these matzahs before, not necessarily on Pesach. But not that it's a problem with the Yom Pesach. I just would want to make sure the Chabura does it in a proper way. It's doing a good job. Whatever it is, so if they're not good, you think people get this idea that these soft matzahs are fluffy and light and delicious and easy to digest. It's not true. It's extremely dense. It's this thick, and it's soft. But it's really, really dense. It's just, it's like biting into a dough. It's not particularly tasty. In fact, I think that the cracker matzahs that we have nowadays are much tastier. I don't know why everybody's running after the soft matzah. The only advantage of the soft matzah is that you can make a real korich. That's what Hillel did in the times of Bayesheni, that he made literally a shawarma. You take the soft matzah, you wrap the lettuce and the meat in the you wrap it korech, right? While wrapping, you wrap the matzah and around the maror, the lettuce and the meat, and you make a shawarma. You can even put mustard if you don't hold from kidneys, if you're Sephardi, and then obviously they did eat kidneys in the times of Hillel. I mean, I'm exaggerating. You might not be able to. Yeah, it is a halachic problem to put mustard because of rishus mevatel mitzvah, that when you have something that's optional and then you eat it with a mitzvah, so maybe the taste of the something that's only optional, that's only because you want to eat it, nullifies the taste of the mitzvah. So that's not lemaisa. You can put mustard in the shawarma of the Korban Pesach, but lemaisa was very similar to a shawarma. The reason they started making hard matzah, by the way, had nothing to do for halachic reasons. Again, there's absolutely no halacha at all that matzah has to be hard. In fact, the Shulchan Aruch says that the maximum thickness for a matzah is a tefach. Like this big, right? Pretty fat. So, we don't do that. The Shulchan Aruch also, the Ramah writes that you try to make the matzahs thinner. It doesn't mean you have to make them hard, but it means you shouldn't rely on the maximum thickness. So good. So why did they start making matzahs hard? Because they started baking matzah all before Pesach. By the Teimanim, so they bake matzah fresh every day of Pesach. That's the way they used to do it in the times of Chazal. Every Jewish housewife knew how to bake a matzah. They had a little oven at home. And just like she would bake bread, chometz, every other day of the year. So during Pesach, she used to bake he or she, whatever, it could be the man of the household, used to bake matzah in the home oven every day of Pesach. It was nice, fresh, warm matzah. Again, it may be less tasty in the chametz, but it was a soft bread. But then we have this chumrah that's already found in the tour that the people in Barcelona, I have to tell Mr. Sklar, he's always telling me how the Sephardim are so much more makel and it's so much more pleasant to be Sephardi. So they're the one who started this. The Sephardim in Barcelona, they started this this practice to bake all matzah before Pesach. Why? Because we know that under most circumstances, I'm not going to go into all the details now, but under most circumstances, if you have a tarovis, if you have a little bit of chametz mixed into Pesach food before Pesach, then it's batal. It follows the regular rules of kashrus, just like if tiny amount of milk falls into a pot of meat cooking, so then the food remains kosher. So if a little bit of chametz falls into Pesach food before Pesach, then you are allowed to eat it on Pesach. We know that the rule that even if a tiny amount of chametz falls into Pesach food on Pesach, so it does not follow the regular rules of kashrus, even the tiniest amount will forbid the food from being eaten on Pesach. It's b'mashu, but before Pesach, He follows the regular rule of kashrus. So the people in there were some extra firm people in Barcelona that used to bake all their matzah before Pesach because they were nervous that if something would go wrong and there would be a tiny bit of chametz somehow mixed into their matzah, then the chametz should be batal. So that's why people, I guess, lost the knowledge. The housewives lost the knowledge of how to bake matzah, and it was started to be taken over. That would be done by the men. So you see, to leave it with the women be a better thing to do. Let the women keep doing it. You shouldn't take religious things out of the hands of women. So you'll make problems. So everybody started baking matzah before Pesach. And if you make soft matzah before Pesach, it's going to go stale or moldy. So you can't bake soft matzah for 8 days in advance, 7 days in advance of Pesach. You have to bake crackers. The crackers are the only things that last. So that's why this practice got started to bake hard matzah. Again, there's no halachic problem with it. It still has the halacha of matzah, but it's not a halachic requirement at all to have hard matzah. If you have a, again, people are used to it. So people are going to do it wrong. If you go to a regular matzah baker, if you go to Puppet Salem Matzah Bakery in Williamsburg, and you say, you knew I'd like to place an order for soft matzah, just roll out the matzah, you know, a little thicker and bake it soft. They're not going to know what to do. They're going to, even if they listen to you, which they might not, so they're going to bake you a matzah that's this thick and it's going to still be hard. You're going to break your teeth. You need to know, you have to go to a Taimani housewife or these Syrians in Brooklyn that know how to do it. They have to put more water in the dough. They have to bake it maybe a little lower temperature for longer. There are ways to do it, but you shouldn't assume you know how to do it. So in the normal milieu that we have nowadays, so it's more recommended to stick with the cracker matzah. Okay. So what does it say? V'shachatu osoko kal das Yisrael beinu arbaim. That this time for the shechita of the Korban Pesach is in the afternoon, that it's between the settings of the sun, meaning the first setting of the sun is what? The sun is at noon. So it's the first setting is when the sun starts to tilt in this direction. That's the first setting because it goes past the midpoint of the sky. It's the way Chazal interpret this Bein Arbaim. And then the second setting of the sun is when it goes below the horizon. Approximately. We're going to talk about, I could talk for a long time about exactly what Chazal mean by Shkiyas HaChama, but whatever it is. So the Bein Arbayim is in the afternoon, before when the sun starts to tilt towards the setting, and then the end point is when it goes under the horizon. So sometime in the afternoon, you have to shecht the Korban at Pesach. And this was the only time that a Korban was shechted after the Tamid Shel Bein HaArbayim. Normally the Tamid Shel Bein HaArbayim was offered in mid-afternoon. And that was the last korban that was offered for the day. But the Korban Pesach was offered after the Tamid Shel Bein HaArbayim. The Tamid Shel Bein HaArbayim was offered at the earliest possible time, which was half an hour after midday. And then after that, they started shechting the Korban Pesach. There was a lot of people. This is the time when every single person has to bring an individual korban. It doesn't have to be one animal per person. For keret, we have the concept of chabura, that you have a lot of people who register for a certain korban Pesach in advance. That's already mentioned here in this week's parsha, that depending on how many people can get a kizayis out of a particular lamb, and remember the lamb or the goats are very small because that's when they're born around in the springtime. So they're very tiny. They have to be under a year old. So that means that the lambs for the Korban Pesach were very small. So really, one family, it could be that one family got a kizayis of the Korban Pesach from one lamb, and that was it. I mean, for each person. So you had to register, but if the Korban Pesach was too big, so you could join another family or other people, random people that you could all get together and offer the Korban Pesach together, as long as you register for it to participate in advance. The rule was that the Korban Pesach had to be roasted by fire, that it couldn't be roasted in any other way, even what we call tzli kedar, that if you, even if you roast it in a pan with no juice, then that would still be invalid. The, it has to be roasted just by touching the fire. We have halachas in Maseches Psachim to talk about what happens if the Korban Pesach touches the wall of the oven. Now, this sounds like achroinish, right? This is like nerves that we have in the later poskim that they come up with a lot of chumras and kashrus. But no, it's in Chazal, in the Mishnayos and the Gemara that talk about that if the Korban Pesach touches the wall of the oven, that means that for that part that the oven of the Korban Pesach touches, then that little bit was not roasted by fire, was roasted by the heat of the oven, by the heat of the wall of the oven. So it has to be roasted by fire, so that's no good. So you have to do what's called kidei netila, that you have to take, you have to cut out when the Korban Pesach finishes roasting, before you eat it, you have to cut out like a centimeter or something, like a significant portion of the flesh of the Korban Pesach from the area. If the like surgical precision, you have to cut out the area that touched the wall of the oven. So that's why we have the concept, even in contemporary kashrus, sometimes we have the concept of kidei netila, that sometimes it's sufficient to cut off a significant portion. There's something called kidei klipa, where sometimes you only have to cut off a very insignificant, just the thinnest layer possible of an item. And there's something called kidei netila. So sometimes we're makel, if you have a, again, I'm not saying anything lamaisa, if you have a shayla, you discuss it with me directly when the situation comes up. But there are some situations where if you cut an onion with a fleishig knife and you weren't supposed to cut it with a fleishig knife, something sharp. So sometimes there are kulas if you remove a kidei netila, at least for Sfardim, I'm more makel on these things. Also sometimes that if you remove a centimeter from each side of the cut, so maybe you could use the rest of the onion, maybe you don't make the entire onion tray for fleishig or whatever. So this concept of kidei netila comes into practice nowadays as well. So there is a rule. So the Chumash says in verse 15, Shivas yomim matzos tochelu, that you should eat matzahs for 7 days. So what does this mean? Does this mean that one is required to eat matzah for all 7 days? So in the Chazal say no. It means that if you want to eat matzah, you have to. If you want to eat bread on Pesach, so you have to eat matzah. You can't eat chametz. But there's no requirement to eat matzah for all 7 days. So the Vilna Gaon has a unique interpretation, and maybe we'll discuss more about this maybe on Pesach itself. It's something I wanted to give a shir about for a while. That the Vilna Gaon, and there's some basis for this in earlier sources as well, that the Vilna Gaon says that's not what it means. It doesn't mean it's completely optional to eat matzah for all seven, eight, or now in the Chutzlar, it's 8 days of Pesach. It means that there's no requirement, but if you do eat matzah, you get mitzvah points. It's called the mitzvah kiyumis. Okay, it's a big chiddush. Most poskim don't assume like this. They assume that it's a mamish reshus, that it's only you don't have to eat matzah at all if you don't want to. But a lot of people are makbid for the Vilna Gaon, and they try to eat at least a little bit of matzah every day of Pesach. Not that it's a requirement, but it may be a mitzvah kiyumis. It may be that you get mitzvah points for eating matzah on Pesach, even if it's not a requirement. However, we'll go back, we'll go now skipping to verse 18, that it says here, Barishon Barbasar Yom Lachodesh Barav Tochlu Matzos. That here it says, Barbasar Yom Lachodesh Barav, on the 14th day of the month at night, meaning really the night of the 15th, but after the sun sets on the day of the 14th, Tochlu Matzos. So Chazal say, you read these words as an independent sentence, Barav Tochlu Matzos. So what I just told you, that eating matzah is optional, only applies to the rest of Pesach. But on the first night of Pesach, what we would call at the Seder, there is a requirement to eat matzah that applies to both men and women. In fact, this is the only mitzvah of the Torah, only mitzvah d'oraisa of eating that is still applicable nowadays. It's a very, very special mitzvah. In the times of the Beis HaMikdash, there used to be mitzvahs that involved eating korbanos. There would be d'oraisa requirements to eat korbanos. But the only d'oraisa requirement of eating anything nowadays is the mitzvah of eating matzah on Seder night. So it's certainly something that we should take very seriously. It says, Ushmartem es ha-matzos. In the previous pasuk in verse 17, that we're supposed to guard the matzos. So what does this mean, to guard the matzos? The Gemara in Maseches Psochim has a whole discussion about what this means. That the Gemara first wants to say that it's enough to Ushmartem es ha-matzos, that you have flour. You don't know where the flour came from. It's tam flour, ground wheat. And you have water. And you mix them together, and now that a Jew is watching the flour and the water to make sure they do not turn into chametz, that is sufficient to create ushmartem es ha-matzos, to watch the matzah, to guard the matzah. And then the Gemara suggests, quoting from some of the Amoraim, that no, that's not enough. You need to have Shmira, you need to guard the matzah from an earlier stage. What does it say? Let's say Rava, I think, or Rabba, I think the different Gersos of the Gemara, that said that when he used to tell the people who harvested the wheat, make sure that when you're making the sheaves of grain, you're bundling them together, whatever, you should do it l'shem matzah. You should do it with the intention of making them into matzah, which means that he was makpid already from the time that the grain was first cut, harvested, that grain should already be watched to make sure that it should not become chametz. So the Gemara says that's not right. This Gemara's conclusion seems to be, no, it's really sufficient just to watch it from the time that you knead the flour and water together. But nevertheless, it says that this Amora didn't go back on it. He didn't admit that he was wrong, and he continued to insist on having the grain washed from the time of harvesting. So that's why that we assume that we should do this nowadays as well, from the grain being washed at the time of harvesting. That it's a bit of a chumrah, but even though it wasn't necessarily required by the Mishnayos, nevertheless, that's the practice nowadays that's brought in Shulchan Aruch, that the matzah for the Seder, the one that you fulfill the mitzvah, Be'erev Tochlu Matzos, should be Shmura Mishas Ketzira. It should be guarded from the time of harvesting. So that wasn't always obtainable. So since the whole thing is a bit more of a chumrah, so in Ashkenaz, they were only makbid on Shmura Mishas Tchina, that they were only makbit to have the grain washed from the time of grinding, because that was the only time when it was possibly reasonable that the grain could become chametz, because they used to have water mills. So there was a little bit of closeness between the flour and the water, so that they had to make sure and watch it. So they considered that to be sufficient to be shmura mishas, to be shmura, not shmura mishas sira, but to be a shmura matzah for the Seder. But technically, in order to be kosher l'Pesach, you just really need Shmura Mishas Lisha. That you just need it to, even that, take it back. That's not even so plush. It could be that even if you find a dough where there was no yeast and someone just mixed, even just your local baker, Goyisha baker, even down the street, just mixed flour and water. So, and you look at the dough and you see, you can recognize that it has not become chametz yet, and then you bake it. So that could be, that's kosher matzah for Pesach. So that, I think, would make everyone here in the room, would make their hair, those of us who still have their hair, is to make their hair stand on end. What Jew is going to eat that nowadays in Pesach? That's completely, completely, no one would accept such a thing, even though technically there may be room to do so, but with good reason. Because nowadays, a lot of flour during the processing, stam flour that you buy in the store is tempered in water. That in order to make it easier to grind, they soak it in water. So that's for sure no good for Pesach. Whether it's chametz gum or mamish is not so pashet. But to make matzah out of it for Pesach is completely completely not acceptable to use a regular flour that you buy in the store under any circumstances. Absolutely, absolutely not. I don't need to tell anybody this. No one would consider doing this. But whatever. But even the matzah nowadays that doesn't say shmura on the package, all matzah nowadays is shmura mishas tchina, that is at least watched from the time of grinding to make sure they don't temper the flour. So that's what the Rishonim and Ashkenaz would have considered acceptable even for the Seder. So really, for the rest of Pesach, certainly, shmura mishas tchina is completely acceptable. It's just for the Seder that we're makbid on Shmura Mishas Ketzira. There are people who are makbid on Shmura Mishas Ketzira to eat only Shmura Matzah, what we call colloquially Shmura Matzah, which is Shmura from the time of harvesting. There are people who are makbid to eat Shmura Mishas Ketzira only for the entire Pesach. And this is based on two things. One is the sheet of the Rambam and the Rif, which may be that L'chatchila, that's what you're supposed to have, but everybody else disagrees with them. And number two is because there were places in Europe where it was very important to be makbid on the hard, watching the grain already after the harvest, because it used to rain a lot at that time, and it could be that the grain would sort of become detached from the ground, and it would get rained on and become chametz before it would even be processed into flour at all. But that concern is not relevant anymore. They harvest the grain from places where that's not an issue. So in my opinion, I think that it's a very, very weak chumrah to be makbid on Shmura Mishas Ketzira for the entire Pesach. So we have a little bit of a problem. There are some of us who are makbid bli neder to only eat hand matzah for the entire Pesach, which I think is a reasonable thing to be makbid on. Not saying you have to, but that's a reasonable that those who have that hakpada are certainly reasonable. But the problem is that all the hand matzah bakeries are only baking Shmura Mishas Ketzira from washing from the time of the harvesting. So that makes everything more expensive. I mean, if somebody wants to start a hand bakery that bakes Shmura Mishas Tchina only, so for the rest of Pesach, besides for the Seder, I'll be more than happy to buy your matzah. I don't know. Just raises the price unnecessarily. Those who eat machine matzah and shmura mishas tchina, the what we call non shmura matzah is available. I think it's no problem whatsoever. You do not need to be makbid on eating shmura mishas ketzira for the entire Pesach. Obviously, okay. I think we'll have to stop here for today. There's obviously a lot more to discuss in Parshas Bo. A lot more about Pesach, which Meretz Hashem will be the Pesach is when is Pesach. It's on the 15th of Nisan. Yeah, I know. Okay, so it's on very, very soon. It's now, we're already in Shvat, month and a half, Pesach, right? Yeah. So we gotta start being, we gotta learn the halachas of, wait, is that right? No, 2 months. Wait. Yeah, 2 months.
March 27th.
Not good at math. My wife is the accountant. I'm not responsible for any math. That's the condition I made with her when we got married. I said I'm not going to be responsible for any math in this relationship. No taxes. No nothing. You're doing all the math. But I just want to say, actually, since we're so close to Pesach, just one vort that's non-halachic, which is that it says Leil Shimurim Hu. It's a night of watching. Where is that? That's in verse. I'm not going to find it right now. Whatever it is. It says later in the parsha, Leil Shimurim Hu, that it's a night of watching. So Rashi famously says that it's a Laila that's Meshuma Ruba Min HaMazikin, that the Kal Yisrael has extra protection that night. And that's part of the reason why we open the door at the Seder by Shvocha Moscha, to show that we're not worried about being attacked on Seder night, that we feel very safe with our divine protection. And even if we have the door open, then nothing's going to happen to us. But there's another pshat. The Rashbam says, Leil Shimurim means that the Jews will guard it by looking forward to it. In other words, they'll shimurim, they'll look ahead to it. Not necessarily. Again, that's another level of interpretation. But he thinks that the simple meaning is that it means that the Jews are looking forward to it. So it's those of you who are dreading Pesach, it means you're doing something wrong. Either you're going too crazy with the cleaning, or there's something wrong with your attitude. We should be looking forward to Pesach. It's a wonderful, wonderful holiday where we can perform a lot of mitzvahs. We should be happy about it. Not go too crazy with the cleaning, and we should be excited that Pesach is coming up very soon. And I'm sure, Mitzvah Hashem, we will learn a lot more about Pesach before that time. Not in necessarily in the context of the Parsha Shir. Maybe we'll do Zoom Shiurim about Hilchos Pesach, or other venues, perhaps. Okay, want to wish everyone a good Shabbos. Those of you I'll be seeing in person, looking forward to seeing you. And everyone else, enjoy. Have a relaxing, peaceful Shabbos.
Shabbos.